Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Yes, indeed. We are going to have a Solartopia. That was the great Dar Williams with Pete Seeger and David Byrne singing the Solartopia song. I am Harvey Wasserman. This is the Solartopia Green Power Wellness Show, another hour of great talk about saving the planet and saving your own body. We are joined today with Joe DeMar, Green Party candidate for the U.S. Senate in Ohio. We may also be joined by his opponent, Anita Rios, who's running also for the same nomination with the Green Party, and I can tell you they're very good friends, everything is hunky-dory. I do want to, as Pete Seeger would say, I do want to start the show. I've been in New England. I'm still in New England now, actually. And I want to talk about what's happening with Vermont Yankee and what may be the most important nuclear fight in the country for quite some time. It appears that there is a good and almost an unexpected, actually, legal loophole that may allow the state of Vermont to prevent the Vermont Yankee nuclear plant from continuing to operate. This is a pretty big deal. What's been going on there is that the state of Vermont, under the governorship of Peter Shumlin, who was elected by the forces in the state that want Vermont Yankee shut, is pursuing, they're not pursuing a legal case. What's happened is when Entergy, which owns Vermont Yankee, came into Vermont with the nuclear plant, they bought an old nuclear plant, Vermont Yankee, and they made a deal with the state that as of 2012, March 21st, which is coming up very shortly, they would agree to shut the plant if the state of Vermont decided not to grant them a permit to continue to operate. And of course, Entergy, being a major American corporation, figured out they could make more money if they stayed and kept the plant open, even though that was not part of the deal. Quite the opposite, actually. And so they went to court, Entergy did, and got a judge to allow them to continue to operate Vermont Yankee nuclear plant, even though the state had turned them down. And unfortunately, the federal court, a judge named John Murtha, did allow them to continue on one basis. But in his decision, Judge Murtha also did not deal with certain other aspects of the state permitting. And among those other aspects was the fact that the state needed to get a permit to continue to generate nuclear waste. And so what's happened now is that the state of Vermont has the apparent power to deny Vermont Yankee the privilege of continuing to produce nuclear waste. Now, the company Entergy has gone into court back to Judge Murtha and asked Judge Murtha to turn around and deny the state of Vermont the right to deny Entergy the right to generate nuclear waste. So it's gotten really, really convoluted and really, really interesting in the state of Vermont now, because the state does apparently have the right to simply say, no, you no longer have the right to generate nuclear waste. Entergy, as I said, has gone back in the federal court, but it's not clear what their rights really are. It's not clear how they're going to be able to pursue this in a way that would allow them to continue to generate nuclear waste. What they're going to have to do is ask the federal court to force the state of Vermont to allow Entergy to continue generating nuclear waste. It's a very, very interesting situation. This is not something we expected. We were disappointed when Matt versus Harvey. We were disappointed when Judge Murtha allowed the state to continue operating allowed the nuclear plant to continue operating despite what they were denied was a certificate of need. It was a very complicated decision. Of course, we didn't agree with it, but nonetheless, it appeared that Vermont Yankee was given a green light to continue to operate. Now we see with this technicality, which is a pretty big technicality, it's not as if it's an obscure little clause in the law, that the owners of Vermont Yankee are really going to have a tough way to go to continue to operate this nuclear plant. The D-Day is March 21st, upcoming in less than 2 weeks, actually. And the reality is that we may be able to see the first shutdown of an operating nuclear plant in this country in many, many, many years. And what's really, really significant about this, and Joe DeMar, who is with us from northwestern Ohio, and where the home of the Davis-Besse nuclear plant is very significant, and we will start off talking with Joe about this. But the fact of the matter is that there are 104 reactors operating in the United States. Many of them are very old. Vermont Yankee, Indian Point, Oyster Creek, Davis-Besse, San Onofre in California. These reactors date back to the 1970s. And they've been going into for license extensions and things like that. And we have been unable to shut any of these reactors. It's been very difficult. The courts are stacked against us. The utility companies want them relicensed. They are operating them. They're running them into the ground. Major radiation releases, the whole deal. And so this is a significant development here because our feeling in the anti-nuclear movement, of which I've been a part since the 1970s, is that if we can take down one of these real old reactors, especially on the on a waste issue, but if a state can get in between the operating license and the utility company on a nuclear plant and force one shut, we think this could really break the dam and, you know, have a huge anti-nuclear domino effect. In particular, Vermont Yankee, there's been a tremendous public focus on Vermont Yankee, and it's not far from Indian Point, the two reactors north of New York City, and which have been, the governor of New York now has joined the governor of Vermont in demanding the shutdown of nuclear plants in his state. And if we get Vermont Yankee shut down on a state's rights issue, there are water permits and other niches that the state of New York could jump into to force the shutdown of Indian Point. This will be a huge deal. There are dozens of reactors in the United States. Well, there are two dozen reactors in the United States that are identical to the Fukushima 1 reactor, and these are old 1970s vintage reactors, not unlike Vermont Yankee, and identical to Indian Point, actually. And if we can start the ball rolling and just nail this first reactor and get it down, Vermont Yankee, I think Indian Point will follow. Oyster Creek in New Jersey could follow. Monticello in Minnesota. As I said, two reactors at San Onofre and the one at Davis-Besse in Ohio. So this is reporting to you from New England, where I, Harvey Wasserman, host of the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show, am reporting. And it's good news. If you want to call in and talk about this, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. We are at the Progressive Radio Network. Matt Bogard is our producer, and we have Joe DeMar on the line. Joe, are you there?
Hi, Harvey.
How are you, Joe? That was a heck of an intro, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's great news about Vermont Yankee. I remember those dramatic pictures on the internet just a few years ago when Vermont Yankee's cooling tower collapsed.
Yeah, that was an interesting moment.
Yeah, I think that was sort of the starter gun for this wave of feeling in Vermont against this nuclear plant. and we applaud it. And yeah, we're fighting Davis Bessie here. I don't know if you heard the latest that we're working on is that it turns out that the containment dome has gigantic cracks in it.
Oh, what's the big deal about cracks in a containment dome? I mean, you know, it's concrete. What's the problem?
Put some tar on it. Well, you're old enough to remember Three Mile Island, I think. And I am,
unfortunately.
Yeah, me too, just barely. But the one thing that the nuclear industry kept touting about Three Mile Island was the containment worked. You know, yeah, there was, you know, we had problems with the reactor. Yeah, there was a partial meltdown, but the containment held. And you know, even though they did release radioactive material into the air, it was a controlled release. But here at Davis Bessie, the containment won't work. It's cracked. It's got big holes in it. And if there were a similar accident here, and Davis Bessie is the same exact plant as Three Mile Island, and in fact had literally almost the same accident just a few months before Three Mile Island, with the same procedures. It's just that our operator happened to catch it before the rods got exposed, while the Three Mile Island operator didn't.
Well, let's elaborate on that a little bit. Actually, Davis Bessie is one of five reactors, and another one is a Three Mile Island, which were built by Babcock and Wilcox back in the 70s. They're out of the reactor business, at least out of the reactor construction business, thankfully.
Yeah.
And there was an accident prior to Three Mile Island at Davis Bessie, and when Three Mile Island happened, the owners of Three Mile Island sued either the owners of Davis Bessie or the builders, claiming that what had happened at Davis Bessie they were not fully informed of what had happened at Davis Bessie, and since it then happened at Three Mile Island, they weren't able to properly cope with it. I mean, that was
right.
An amazing lawsuit.
Oh, yes. Davis Bessie is just an amazing plant in terms of the number of near misses we've had. Probably people who listen to you are all familiar with the hole in the head.
Well, no, I described it a little bit at the beginning, but why don't you tell us about the hole in the head at Davis Bessie? We're talking with Joe DeMar. He's a Green Party candidate for the United States Senate in Ohio. We're going to talk to him later about the election race, about the Green Party, about Dennis Kucinich. But we're on to the nuclear issue now, and the Davis Bessie nuclear plant is in. You live near it, right, Joe?
Oh, well, I live within 30 miles of it. So
okay.
I'm,
well, that's too close,
I'm
but nonetheless.
Yeah.
Davis Bessie is at Oak Harbor, Ohio. It's just a little bit east of Toledo on Lake Erie. And it's the reason
right.
I never took my kids up to the beach in Lake Erie, because I didn't want to be near that plant. So tell us, Joe, about the hole in the head at Davis Bessie. It's one of the classic pieces of nuclear lore.
Well, for a period of about 10 years, the control rod nozzles, where the rods went in and out of the reactor at Davis Bessie, were cracked and leaking. And what was happening was that the boric acid water mix that's inside the reactor was leaking out onto the top of the reactor itself. And over the course of those years, it took a lot of concentrated negligence on the part of Davis Bessie to ignore things like radiation monitors going off and indications of rust and dripping. Well, but they did. They managed to ignore all that. And the top of the reactor head was literally eaten away by the boric acid. And a football-sized hole, roughly, was bored through the mild steel outer shell, through, I believe it's 10 inches of concrete, all the way down to the inner shell, which is a 5/8 inch lining of stainless steel. And that lining had begun to bulge and crack because Davis Bessie operates at 40 atmospheres of pressure. And one aspect of this was that the whole time this was happening, Davis Bessie was supposed to be shutting down for some maintenance, and they refused to. They said to the NRC, no, we don't need maintenance, we're just going to keep running. And finally, even the toothless corporate-owned NRC said, you know, you have to shut down now. So they finally shut down for the refueling. They were replacing their fuel the rods where they go in and out. And the way I heard this story, I can't confirm this, but I heard that a worker dropped something and it fell into the hole, and that's how they discovered the hole.
I heard that a worker, they were doing an inspection, and a worker leaned on one of the rods and it fell over. So I guess there's all sorts of urban legend about how it was actually discovered, but nonetheless.
Right, but there's no question that we were literally 5/8 of an inch from a nuclear disaster at Davis Bessemer. And an interesting aspect of it is that these cracks, Earth Energy is claiming that they were caused by the blizzard of 78. And
a blizzard that caused a crack in a nuclear plant?
That's what they're saying, yes, that the cold, it was so cold that the concrete, you know, that the metal contracted and the concrete cracked. And we're not buying it. I mean, the activists like Michael Keegan and Terry Lodge and those of us, and Anita, those of us that are fighting this plant, just don't believe them. We think this is another nuclear industry lie. But
Wait a minute. Are you telling us that the nuclear industry doesn't always tell the truth?
I'm sorry to be the one to have to break this to you, Harvey.
Oh, come on. I bet you're going to say there's no Santa Claus also.
Well, I'll let you research that on your own. But,
all right. But we'll get that one. Okay.
Yeah. But, yes, if this is true, that means that pretty much every nuclear plant that's been operating since 77, 78, may be at risk for having huge cracks in them. They're not even good at lying at First Energy. It's an interesting battle. And yes, we've been fighting it for a long time. Anita's been fighting it for many, many years.
Is Anita with us yet? Anita Rios, are you on the phone? Okay, she hasn't called in. She may not. So go ahead.
All right. So that's where we're at here. We're interveners in their relicensing process. Four groups, the Green Party of Ohio, Don't Waste Michigan, the Citizens Alliance in Ontario, and, the name of the fourth group just flew out of my head. I hope someone calls in and can remind me who the fourth group is. But we're all interveners in the relicensing, and it's scheduled to shut down in 2016. We've made a lot of progress in our relicensing battle. They've thrown out some contentions, but they've kept some, and we've pushed back the relicensing approval for about a year now. So
you're saying that the owners of Davis Bessie, which is the First Energy company, are trying to get a license that would allow them to operate for another, 20 years after 2016?
That's right. They're scheduled to shut down, and they think they can operate this plant, which is literally crumbling to pieces. They think they can get it to run another 20 years. So,
okay.
They disagree. Yeah.
And has any of this affected them, all this whacked-out publicity and so on?
Well, they had a public meeting on the issue. And it was very interesting because it was attended by about 300 people. And most of the audience were people who worked at the plant or who were in the immediate community. But none of them spoke. The only ones who spoke were those of us who were fighting the plant. And Dennis Kucinich called for that hearing, and I have to give him credit because he's also been the one who revealed things like the fact that the cracking isn't just surface cracking. They said these were cracks on decorative elements of the nuclear power plant. And Dennis Kucinich managed to ferret out the fact that the cracks go all the way in to the rebar that holds the containment dome up. So we all spoke against it. No one spoke for it, even though the room was filled with people who work at that plant. And I took that as a sign that the people who work there also know that this is time to shut this plant down. But First Energy is continuing as if nothing is happening. They're just, in fact, they're shutting down a lot of their other plants in Ohio, their coal plants, and they're putting all their eggs in the nuclear basket, basically.
Okay. Tell us a little more, and talk for another minute or two. I'm going to have to leave the phone for a second. I'll be right back. So give us more about Davis-Bessey.
Okay. Well, the cracks go all around the top of the dome, and they also are where the cooling pipes come in and out of the dome. And Davis-Bessey, when after that boric acid incident that destroyed the first head, they put a second head on there, also manufactured by Babcock and Wilcox, that was exactly the same and did exactly the same thing, started leaking out of the control rod nozzles and started again to eat through the top of the head. And so they ran the plant for almost 3 years with a new, quote-unquote, brand-new head that had exactly the same flaws and was starting to get corroded just like the old head. So they've taken that head out now. They ordered a third head from France, and they just installed that a few months ago back in October. And so what's happened every time they've taken out one of these old heads and put in a new head, they've had to cut a gigantic hole in the containment dome.
So they've actually cut holes in the containment dome?
Yes, gigantic holes, holes big enough to haul at the top of a nuclear reactor through. Because there's no doors, there's no, you know, no latches. You can't lift the containment dome off. They literally get the saws out and cut holes in it, using, of course, 2,000 temporary workers who, in the course of that few months working on it, absorb a lifetime of radiation. But it seems to us a much more likely scenario that cutting gigantic holes in your dome might be what is weakening it and causing cracks. And the amazing thing is they're scheduled to do it again. They're scheduled to cut a fourth gigantic hole in their dome because their steam tubes are corroding and looking like they might collapse, just like at San Onofre. And
is the Nuclear Regulatory Commission going to allow them to do this? Have they gotten permission?
Yeah. Don't worry. The NRC has inspectors on site at the plant, just like they have for, many years, and they're going to do their best to protect us somehow from the effects of, a collapsing containment dome.
All right. This is the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. We're talking with Joe DeMar from Green Party of Ohio, running for U.S. Senate in Ohio. You're in the primary. When is Election Day, Matt? Is that today?
Today. This is the day. So if anyone is listening in Ohio, we need you to go to the polls today, ask for a Green Party ballot, and then I'm a write-in candidate, so you would find the spot for U.S. Senate and then write in Joseph Rosario DeMar. That's spelled D-E-M-A-R-E. And in doing so, you'll be joining the Green Party of Ohio, and so you'll be helping us in our fight against both Davis-Bessey and Perry Nuclear Power Plant.
All right. Where is the Perry Nuclear Plant?
Perry Plant is just east of Cleveland. And just last week, Perry, kind of ironic, on the day when three Democratic senators announced they are fighting for a renewable, quote-unquote, energy standard that included nuclear power, the Perry nuclear plant went down. One of their generators overheated, and they had to do an emergency scram. And I don't believe that they're up yet from that. I think they're still down from that. So Perry, both of these plants are owned by First Energy. And the way I characterize it is that all the plants in the U.S. are in a race to a meltdown right now. We know one of them is going to win. Davis-Bessey leaps ahead, sometimes Perry, sometimes San Onofre. But personally, I'm putting my money on a First Energy-owned plant because they've got two of the worst in the country. So,
The Perry nuclear plant is about 35 miles east of Cleveland, and the Davis-Bessey plant is just a few miles east of Toledo.
Toledo. Right.
So,
and then we have Fermi also just a few miles north of Toledo.
Well, Fermi is down at Monroe, Michigan.
That's right.
And that's the where we had in 66, we had a meltdown at the Fermi nuclear plant, Fermi Unit 1, which was a fast breeder reactor and which could actually have exploded. It became the subject of a book by John G. Fuller called We Almost Lost Detroit and the famous and probably the very first rap song by Gil Scott-Heron, We Almost Lost Detroit. We are talking with Joe DeMar, Green Party candidate for U.S. Senate in Ohio. Joe, what are you saying as a candidate for the U.S. Senate about Davis Bessie and about nuclear power in general?
Well, I'm saying that since I'm running for federal office, I'm saying that we have to remove all the federal subsidies for nuclear power plants. And knowing full well that the minute we do that, the minute that, for example, we stop insuring nuclear power plants, the minute that we stop financing the loans to build nuclear power plants, the nuclear industry will shut down. I've been very heartened.
Well, what do you mean by shut down? Now, there are older plants that are like Davis Bessie and Vermont Yankee that don't require more federal subsidies. What they do, direct money, what they do require, of course, is protection against liability in case of a major disaster.
Exactly, and that's what I want to remove. I want to remove that protection from liability, especially since the experiences in Japan, we know that that these companies are capable of destroying large areas. And I think that a lot of people forget that for decades, anti-nuclear activists like us have been saying that an accident like Fukushima could occur and, in fact, was inevitable. And we were called crazy by the pro-nuclear industry. And it happened. You know, we are right. And part of the justification that for using tax money to indemnify these companies was that the chance of being a tremendous accident was supposedly so remote it wasn't really a factor. Well, now we know that chance is very high. It's not a remote chance. It's something that's likely to happen and becoming likelier every day as the plants age. So, yes, that's what I want to do. I want to remove the federal insurance program that protects the owners of these plants and prevent them from becoming limited liability corporations.
All right. We are with at the Green Solartopia Green Party, and we'll try that as a little slip there, the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. We are with Joe DeMar. I guess I'm not sure that Anita Rios is going to join us. We're at 2:30 now, getting ready for a break. It's been talking mostly about old nuclear reactors. Coming up, we'll continue this after the break. Okay? And we'll be back in a minute.
Family, community, healthy children, and lots of more for the man.
All right. Great Dana Lyon singing Solartopia to the Rocky Talk tune. We're talking about nuclear power today for a change. And the old reactors now. I will say, I want to say at the top here that, top after the break, that a major development has occurred, very favorable to the movement for a solartopian world and to survival on this planet, which is for the first time since the early 2000s, since the early days of the George W. Bush administration, the executive branch has not gone to Congress and asked for more money for loan guarantees to build new nuclear plants. Now, this is a really big deal because we have been fighting them tooth and nail since Bush came in and now Obama to prevent more money, many billions of dollars, going into a fund of the Department of Energy that would underwrite loans to building new nuclear plants. And we don't think that's a good idea to have more money for new nuclear plants, certainly not federal loan guarantees. Now, Bush put in, he wanted $50, $100 billion, I don't remember, it was a stupendous amount of money, and we held him to $18.5 billion. And then in 2007, he came back, and Pete Domenici, the senator from New Mexico, was demanding 36 or 50, I can't remember. It was, again, a large amount of money,
for underwriting loans for new nuclear plants, and a national movement rose up, and we stopped that. And we also formed a website at that time, which I edit, called nukefree.org, N-U-K-E-F-R-E-E.org. It was a national signature gathering campaign. A song was written, which was put on the internet with Jackson Brown, Bonnie Raitt, Graham Nash, Keb Moe, and Ben Harper. We delivered petitions to Congress in October of 2007, and thanks in part, large part, to Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid, Diane DeGette, and Dennis Kucinich, among others, Ed Markey, congressman from Massachusetts. These loan guarantees were not put into the federal budget. So, however, the Obama administration, when they came in, continued to ask for new loan guarantees, and then last year, the Obama administration gave $8.33 billion in loan guarantees to a Southern company in Georgia to build two reactors at the Vogtle, V-O-G-T-L-E site, and those have somewhat proceeded, although it's very slow. And so now, this time, this year, the new budget request for the first time does not include any additional money for new loan guarantees to build new nuclear plants. And we are certain, of course, that this is because of the great pressure that's been put forward by the anti-nuclear movement, which has made it politically untenable to ask for new nuclear loan guarantees. And so what we're going to do now is just fight it off. The DOE still has about $10 billion for new loan guarantees to build yet another nuclear project. No one has come forward really at this point to ask for that money. And so the one new nuclear project going ahead is the two reactors in Georgia. There's two more being built sort of in South Carolina, but they are proceeding very, very slowly. And I believe personally that these reactors will be shut, will be stopped, because the economic of new nuclear is just ridiculously prohibitive now. There's absolutely no reason to even think in straight economic terms about building new nuclear power plants. So at this point in time, the focus is shifting very rapidly and very importantly to old reactors, reactors that have been operating especially since the 1970s, and this would include the Davis-Bessey nuclear plant in Ohio. We've been talking to Joe DiMaggio, Green Party candidate for U.S. Senate there, but most importantly right now, the Vermont Yankee nuclear plant in southern Vermont, on the near the very close to the Massachusetts border and directly across the river from New Hampshire. This plant has been leaking tritium from pipes that the owners denied even existed, and they have been involved in a legal battle against the state of Vermont, which has actually decided that they want Vermont Yankee shut. And what you have now is a confrontation between a sovereign state of the United States and a private corporation that owns a nuclear power plant. The state, the people, the public want this nuclear plant shut, and they've made it very clear in terms of their elections, and the law is on their side in the state of Vermont, but the utility has gone to the federal court, got a decision that allegedly, apparently, at least on the surface, denied the ability of the state to shut the reactor. But they missed something. They missed a necessary permit that the owners of Vermont Yankee would have to get in order to continue to generate nuclear waste. And this is a really amazing situation. The federal court allegedly, apparently, ruled in favor of the utility company, but the state board that oversees the production of nuclear waste in the state came back and said, hey, we still have the right to prevent you from generating nuclear waste. And now the Entergy, the corporation, has gone into the same federal court in front of the same judge and asked that he revise his ruling so that he will now deny the state of Vermont the right to not issue a permit to create nuclear waste. Joe, have you heard anything like this at Davis-Bessey?
No, I haven't heard anything like this specifically at Davis Bessie because, as you know, Vermont was unique in that the agreement was to give the state veto power. No other state, Ohio, doesn't have it. And most court cases that I know of say that the NRC has the jurisdiction over nuclear issues, and so states don't get that kind of right. But Vermont was unique, and that's one of the great things about the overwhelming vote in the Vermont legislature to close the plant. I think that gave us all a good jolt of adrenaline there.
Now what's going to happen is a major battle over states' rights, ironically. States' rights was the catchword of Southern racism for many, many years. But now we have, of course, the medical marijuana issue has become a states' rights issue, or marijuana in general. And now we have nuclear power. The question, how much right does a state have to make a decision about a nuclear plant that operates within its borders? We're having this in Massachusetts now, too. The Pilgrim nuclear plant is going in front of a state board, which has something to say about whether they get a renewed operating license. And the Pilgrim reactor, another really old reactor, could be shut within the year if they don't get a license renewal. And the question will be, the question will be, how much power will the state have to make or break this decision? And we don't yet know. But it's coming up quickly. And as I said at the top of the show, this battle in Vermont is going to have a huge impact on the future, not just of the building of new nuclear plants, but I think basically we are very close to winning and preventing new nuclear plants from being built, at least in this country, but also for the continued operation of old reactors. Now, Davis Bessie in Ohio is really at the top of the list in terms of whacked out, inefficient, crumbling, and very dangerous old reactors. Can you tell us a few more things about Davis Bessie, Joe, that might stick and that people should know about?
There's so much. This plant happens to operate at higher temperatures and pressures than any other nuke plant in the U.S. So the chance of accident, of something going wrong, is much higher. Marcy Kaptur and Dennis Kucinich are locked in a battle because the Republicans did gerrymandering, and so they are one of the very few differences between them on positions because, the Republicans basically put two of the most liberal Democrats in Congress, pitted them against each other for the same votes by including Toledo and Cleveland in a dumbbell-shaped gerrymander, which has a little strip 1 mile long that goes the length of Lake Erie. Mm-hmm. But one of the few differences is that Ms. Kaptur has come out in favor of Davis Bessie and continued support. She used to be opposed to it. She's changed her tune. Dennis Kucinich is still 100% against Davis Bessie. But of course, the Greens, we've always been against nuclear power, and we always will be. And so that's why this primary election that I'm in today, Tuesday, March 6th, is so important because we need to get people to register for the Green Party and by voting in this primary to send a crystal clear message to, all the policymakers that people just won't stand for this kind of ecological folly anymore. So, like I said, if anybody's listening who hasn't voted yet, please go to the polls right now, ask for a Green Party ballot, and on the space for U.S. Senate, write in my name, Joseph Rosario DeMare, DeMare.
Well, Joe, Anita Rios will be the nominee from the Green Party for U.S. Senate, and when you do that, you'll then be running against Sherrod Brown, who
That's
is
right.
one of the Democrat and one of the more liberal Democrats in the Senate. So the question that's always asked of third-party candidates. What is your feeling about Sherrod Brown and potential negative? He's running against a guy named Josh Mandel, who's a young, extremely conservative Republican I don't think anybody listening to the show would want to have in the U.S. Senate.
Yeah, Mandel hasn't won yet. Donna Glissman might actually beat him for the Republican vote.
Oh, so he has a primary battle?
That's true. Six Republicans do. But to answer your question, though, I would go so far as to say that Sherrod Brown is one of the best Democrats in the Senate right now, and that's the problem. He folded on the public option. He voted for the Defense Authorization Act, which allows for unlawful detention and torture in custody. The Democrats fold as a party when it comes down to it at crunch time. They fold. Greens do not fold. One of my promises when I'm in the Senate is to filibuster until I drop or until I can get one other senator to filibuster with me to prevent the war in Iran. I will not allow any funding or authorization for another insane war over oil. Sherrod can't make that promise because he's part of the system. Last year he took $60,000 from First Energy and American Electric Power as a campaign contribution. And I don't think, you know, when it comes down to it, he's going to bite the hand that feeds him because he can't. Now, Greens, for us Greens, money is not an issue. We've pledged not to take money from corporations or corporate PACs, and we don't have any to speak of. We've got a little tiny bit of money, but what we do have is lots of people that feel and believe the same way we do, and it's people that win elections. It's people that cast the votes, not dollars.
We wish that was true, of course, with the Citizens United ruling that corporations are people, that money is considered free speech in the electoral process. We have a corporatocracy as opposed to a democracy.
Those things aren't true. I mean, they're dangerous legal fantasies that the Supreme Court has bought into, but they're patently false. Corporations are not people. Money is not speech. Even if, you know, five old guys in robes say they are. So eventually, when you're following a dangerous fantasy, eventually reality does creep in. You know, it turns out you really can't fly, and if you jump off that roof, you're not going to do very well. So it's similar to back when they used to say that slavery was legal, that you could own another human being. Well, that was never true. Even when it was the law of the land, that was false. And same thing right now. Money is not speech. Corporations are not people. And people are what fuel democracy, not dollars.
Well, we hope that's true. And how is your campaign funded, if at all?
My campaign is funded by individual donations from actual real people. The only donation we've turned back was a well-meaning fella who owned a tattoo parlor, and he sent me a check from the tattoo parlor. And we had to refund that money and explain to him we can't take money from a business. That's how my campaign is funded. Checks from Greens around the state, from friends, from family, but nothing from Monsanto.
Well, very good. We're with Joe DeMar, Green Party candidate for U.S. Senate in the state of Ohio. And now you say that Sherrod Brown will be the Democratic nominee. I assume he doesn't have any opposition in the Senate in the primary today.
He has one write-in opponent, but no one knows his name.
Oh, all right. And in order to vote for you, your name has to be written in on the ballot. Is that correct?
That's correct. And it's a pretty simple process, really. You just ask for the Green Party ballot. There's a space for U.S. Senate, and then you write my name in that space. You write it in, you know, if you're asking for paper ballot, there's a line, you write it in and fill in a little oval. If you use the computer ballot, you touch the space, a keyboard appears, and you type in my name.
Okay, and what do you hope to accomplish with this candidacy?
What I hope to accomplish is to give a real voice to the 99%. President Obama knows what to say. He's been saying the same things. He's trotting out the same things he said 4 years ago when we first elected him. But the difference is now we have 4 years of experience. We know that he doesn't want health care that's universal, affordable, and comprehensive. He wants a health care program that will ensure the profits of the health insurance industry. What I want to do is to bring the actual views that America has to the Senate floor. And I can do that if enough people vote for me, or I should say when enough people vote for me. I can do that in a way that simply is not being done today, except perhaps by Bernie Sanders.
And let's talk about the national Green Party for a minute. We're down to the last 8 minutes here of the show. What is the basic premise and purpose and mission of the Green Party nationally?
Well, the Green Party everywhere, we have our 10 key principles, and those are nonviolence, ecological wisdom, grassroots democracy, social justice, feminism, diversity, decentralization, personal and global responsibility, and future focus. And I may have missed one. If I didn't, someone please call in and tell me. But since decentralization is one of our main principles, our key principles, it's up to Greens everywhere to take those principles and apply them where they're at, in the groups that they're at, and decide what exactly ecological wisdom means in Cincinnati or in Columbus or in Defiance, Ohio. The role of the National Party, as I see it, is to give us, when we need it, that national presence, you know, to allow us to have the structure to run a presidential candidate, for example. We've got Jill Stein and Roseanne Barr right now are both trying to get our national presidential endorsement and run on the Green Party. To me, that's it. We're not a centralized party. It's not up to the national to dictate to the locals and the states and the smaller groups of Greens what exactly they're supposed to be doing. But we did, the national did recently make an excellent decision that nationally the Greens are organizing to commemorate Fukushima Day, the one-year anniversary of the Fukushima disaster.
And where will that happen? That's March 11th, five days from now. That's on the this coming Sunday.
All over the country, and basically every group of Greens gets to decide, you know, how they're going to commemorate Fukushima Day, and that kind of guidance is okay. But as I see it, the role of the National Party is a very limited one in this country.
So are you going to have a Fukushima commemoration at Davis Bessie?
Well, a group of us got together to talk about that. Unfortunately, we've run into some trouble. I ran into some trouble because I've been working pretty much nonstop on my campaign. As soon as my campaign's over tomorrow, we're going to resume trying to put together an event. The initial suggestion was we would have a die-in at Toledo surrounding the First Energy corporate offices, that we would get people together, we'd hold hands, and at the time marking the Fukushima disaster, we would do a die-in around that building. We're going to get together and we're going to do something. I just haven't been able to get all the details nailed down yet because I've been going around the state talking to people and doing a lot of campaigning. In fact, you caught me. I just taken my campaign staff to lunch, and I'm sitting still in the bistro where we managed to eat on my cell phone. But
Tell me nationwide for our listeners around the country, where would people want to? How would people find out where the nearest rally on March 11th will be?
Well, there's a number of groups that are working on rallies for March 11th. There's CAN, the Citizens Against the Coalition Against Nukes. That's a Facebook page. You can go to the Green Party USA website. I believe there's information there. NIRS, NIRS, Nuclear Information Resource Service, they are also trying to coordinate a list of all the Fukushima anniversary things that are happening. So those three places are a good place to start.
Okay, and we'll be posting the events also at nukefree.org, N-U-K-E-F-R-E-E.org, the website I edit. We will post events for March 11th, the Fukushima commemoration anniversary of the beginning of an accident that has yet to end, where radiation is still leaking, and there we still have heat in at least three reactors and a spent fuel pool. This is very serious stuff.
Can I share something extremely hopeful about Fukushima, though? That I just a few days ago, I saw a UPI story that it turns out that Japan is down to two operating nuclear reactors.
Yes, out of almost 60.
Right. And those two are scheduled to shut down in April. So that country will have gone from one of the most nuclear-dependent countries in the world to a nuclear-free country in just about a year.
Well, let me explain to that, because it's a very important, and it's just about going to be the last thing we're going to be able to talk about, is the reason for that is that when nuclear plants in Japan shut down for maintenance and refueling, the provinces, the equivalent of our states, have the right to prevent them from reopening. They get to review the situation, and so as a result of Fukushima, the states or the provinces in Japan have been refusing to allow those plants to reopen. And so what we have now is almost all of the reactors in Japan, which have shut for various reasons, have been unable to reopen. And this is, you know, a huge deal. Japan, of course, is a bedrock, or has been a bedrock, of the nuclear power industry worldwide. Many of the major components for nuclear plants worldwide are manufactured in Japan. And we are about, as Joe DiMaggio, the Green Party candidate for U.S. Senate in Ohio, as you just said, these reactors, Japan is now almost nuclear-free. So it's a big, big deal. Joe, to wrap up, what do you want to tell us about the Green Party?
Harvey, I want to tell you that with our policy of not taking any corporate money, that the Green Party really is a party for the people of the United States of America, as well as worldwide. And that the principles, if you agree with the Green Party principles, you should vote for the Green Party candidates, period. People who play games with their votes lose. Don't go voting for a party you don't want or don't fully support because you think it's the smart thing to do. Democracy works best when people vote their convictions, and that's what I'm asking people in Ohio to do today.
Okay, if your convictions are for a green-powered earth, a solartopian reality with social justice,
absolutely,
and no more environmental pollution, a shutdown of the Davis-Bessie and Vermont Yankee nuclear plants, among so many others. Joe DiMaggio in Ohio is your guy for U.S. Senate, and there are Green Party candidates all over the country. Joe, it's been an excellent show. Hopefully next week we'll be able to talk more about the shutdowns of Vermont Yankee, Pilgrim, Davis-Bessie, and all the other nuclear reactors. Until then, I'm Harvey Wasserman. This has been the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week on the radio.
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, so we had to work to pay the cost.